and that's exactly what we're doing tonight. We are firing it up for our third segment, our second guest for the night. Been a big night for us here in the studio, and we're all having a great time.
Oh, it's been unbelievable. Huge night.
Very interesting EVPs from MCPI. Always great to have those guys on.
I still have the chills, Ash. I got to be honest. Still got the chills.
It was pretty chilling. That we've got the window open, too, which doesn't help at all.
Yeah. Right. Correct.
Our next guest is something I've been looking forward to for a long time. We've had a lot of UFO guests on, but we haven't had anyone specifically for Billy Meier. And I've really, really enjoyed all the media and the multimedia, the things that we're able to really sort of see and base our own assumptions on from the Meier case. So it's great to have Michael Horn on with us tonight. How are you doing, Michael?
I'm fine, guys. Thanks very much for having me on, too.
We've been looking forward to this. John has been giddy like a schoolgirl before the freshman social.
I have to be honest. Yes, I'm not dressed like one, but I am just as giddy.
I was going to ask about that.
Yeah. Actually, he has his prom dress on and everything.
I got to say, the knee-highs are a little disturbing.
Yeah, though. They are. But, you know, it's all for effect.
You went the extra mile. I like the rouge. I like the whole makeup. I think it's a great and interesting look. I'm feeling some feelings that are a little foreign and new to me, but we're going to work through those later on in the hour.
It's very early D. Snyder.
Ash, what are you doing over there?
You don't want to know. You know. This is why the live webcam only sees me from the waist up. It's great to have you on, Michael. The Billy Meier case, I think, is probably one of the most influential photographic cases that I remember even as a child sort of ushering my way into the world of ufology. And I think a lot of people don't realize how synonymous Meier's photos are with the very field of ufology itself.
Well, you're right. Actually, they are unparalleled in terms of clarity, quality, and abundance. And they are often used, mostly without permission, by all sorts of people to make the case visually for UFOs. And then, of course, they handily, for the most part, ignore the case itself because it's far too troubling for mainstream media to touch.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know Billy, you know, was, you know, scrutinized relentlessly for, you know, a lot of this. I know these photos have been looked at since they are so clear and so unbelievable. I think it kind of raises the level of disbelief just because, you know, people just don't want to deal with how they really are incredible. And it's just people are just used to, I guess, the image of a UFO as being something blurry, something maybe you can't make out. And the fact that these are so clear, I think it makes it even more difficult for certain people to believe.
Yeah, they really consider his evidence too good to be true.
Right.
And it's an interesting thing because I'll just tell you a couple things here. The Meier case is the most suppressed case, that is, via corporate, military, intelligence, etc. But even more importantly, on a certain level, the biggest opponents to the Meier case haven't really been the skeptics. The skeptics have come at it. They took their shots. They made their claims about being able to duplicate the photos and debunk. They couldn't. We've defeated the skeptic challenge. The problem really is the UFO community has been literally for decades the biggest opponent of the Meier case.
Why do you think that is?
A few reasons. One, you know, as we've mentioned here about the clarity, people in the UFO community were complaining, well, their photos and films and everything, it's too good to be true, it's too clear. And, of course, an enormous factor, in my opinion, having met many people in the UFO field, a high level of envy, jealousy, feeling personally threatened that they won't have some form of career, importance, self-importance, what have you, should the Meier case gain the kind of prominence, the kind of recognition that it really should have in this world.
It's strange that the UFO community, the very community that wants to embrace evidence, has such a hard time sometimes really sort of incorporating it into their own personal lexicon of data. Now, I think a lot of people are familiar with the photographs, but just to take a step back for a moment, we've got a lot of people in and out of our chat room tonight that are really interested in this. Billy Meier, the man, is also very, very interesting, too. Now, this is a guy who took these photographs with one arm.
Yeah, He's a one-armed, one-handed man who has lived probably the most amazing life of any human that's ever walked the planet. Now, that's a big claim, and most people are saying, well, who is he? I've never heard of him. Well, that's part of the problem. You haven't heard of him because of suppression from very high up and the failure of people who should be investigating something as remarkable as this to actually do it. They just did not do their work, and he remains under surveillance. He attracted the attention of the intelligence agencies of Europe and the CIA. It's virtually as soon as he went public with his information in 1975, if not before, there was there's an abandoned military base just up the road from where he lives, and that was used for many years by the CIA and Swiss intelligence to observe and monitor Meyer and not only his friends and group members, but they also took some photos of the craft themselves. This is something that the investigative team learned. So he remains to this day under observation and surveillance, if you will.
The documentary, by the way, is fascinating. And I was watching it, the thing that I kept thinking to myself was how much of a distinct separation the media has had of Meyer's now versus Meyer then. And it seems as although that's a perfect way to really discredit the personality and character of this man. Now, earlier in his life, he had a lot of connections, not only with local government, but with governments all around the world.
Pretty much. He traveled through 42 different countries in Europe, Africa, Asia. He studied the world's major religions so that he would understand more about them directly, because he was being, we're told in this case, tutored and mentored by extraterrestrial humans for a very, very specific purpose. And so, you know, the UFO part of it, if you will, as fascinating as it is, it really isn't the real meat of the matter. But as you're mentioning, he rubbed shoulders with a lot of people, some of whom either were or became, major players on the world stage.
Now, even so, this was, I found extremely interesting, was the fact that this is a man who also met a young Saddam Hussein.
Yeah. Amazing, isn't it? They were about the same age. They were in their early 20s. Meyer had already met Mahatma Gandhi, Indira Gandhi. Mm. He would meet people like Nehru and Tito and King Farouk and Haile Selassie. Some of your audience may not even know about these people because they were historical leaders of different countries. And indeed, one of the people who was an up-and-coming thug at the time was Saddam Hussein. And as we show, Meyer tells it himself in the film. He said, Saddam Hussein was so determined to be a ruler that he would do anything, including, play the part of a holy man if necessary, to gain power and control. Hmm.
Seeing some of the pictures of a young Meyer, actually, he was a really handsome, rugged guy, too.
Yeah.
Very Indiana Jones-ish, really had that quality.
Yeah, Indiana Jones meets Luke Skywalker or something. I mean, you've got a guy who, since he's 5 years old or 6 years old at the time, he is literally going on board with an elder teacher on craft, being tutored and taught and traveling around in our solar system as well as into different countries around the world. And at the same time, he evolved, I'll just say, this rugged kind of Indiana Jones kind of guy who was known as the Phantom in the Middle East. He was hired by police departments in India and Turkey and I think West Pakistan to bring in serial killers and mass murderers, people who were, sociopaths who were out there harming people. Meyer had nerves of steel, which were accompanied by a .44 Magnum and a few other tricks. And while he said he never killed anybody, he did tell me, he says, well, I only shot people when they pointed their weapons at me, and then I would just wound them and let the authorities bring them in. So he did it all.
He had this awesome pin-brimmed cowboy hat in most of his photos that I was jealous of. I'd wear this thing today. Not only was this guy very influential, but he also had a real bitchin' fashion statement going for him, too. I love that hat.
Well, it's part of why he's called Billy, because he liked to dress in some of the accoutrement of the some of the heroes of dubious status of the Wild West.
So Billy the
Billy
Kid.
Billy the Kid, Wild Bill Hickok, all that. Mm-hmm. And it was an American, I think a Californian woman, who was in the Middle East at the time, who gave him the nickname Billy. She said, "You remind me of Billy the Kid. Billy, I'm going to call you Billy." And he said, "I like that." Mm-hmm. So that stuck with him.
Now, when and how did he lose his arm?
It was something that, indeed, he was, you know, warned, forewarned about. I'm not going to make the pun about forewarned is forearmed, but, you know, he was told 10 years at least before it happened that he was going to lose his arm. There was nothing that his friends could do about it. It was something that was part of his own destiny. He'd have to learn to live with it. So one day he got on a bus in Turkey, and it was a hot day. It was a narrow street, and he sat next to the window, and he put his left arm out the window, and the drunken truck or bus driver came the other way. Meyer was literally pulled out of the bus, had a very, very brutal accident. They thought he was dead. They left him lying in a ditch for several hours. Then some people discovered they heard him moaning, took him to a Turkish hospital, and they sawed off what was left of his arm. And so he has no, you know, effectively no left arm at all, just the stump from the up in the bicep area is kind of left. And he, what's remarkable here is it was after he lost his arm in 1965, you know, beginning effectively in 75, that he began to present the most incredible photos, films, video, metal samples, sound recordings, all as a one-armed man. He had taken UFO photos in India in 1964, and there were people there that witnessed him, they witnessed the ships, and they witnessed one of the ETs.
That was something that I also found interesting in looking at some of the evidence, was we see a lot of these photographs, and this is the post-de-armed, I guess you want to call it that, or the post-amputee Meyer,
yeah.
But there were photographs taken before, and there are people, and even people in prominent positions, I believe one was a foreign ambassador, who corroborates the fact that when she was a little girl, she remembers these pictures being taken.
Exactly. Well, what you're referring to is a woman named Pobol Cheng, who was a young girl, along with her, I think, sister or brother and her grandfather at an ashram in India where Meyer was studying. She witnessed the ships that Meyer photographed there. There were up to 8 of them at a time that were hovering over the ashram. And she also witnessed Meyer walking and talking with a woman who came down from one of the ships. This woman would occasionally just sit in her room at night while this young girl was falling asleep, just, you know, stroking her hair and maybe just sitting there with her, being company. And she said, you know, whenever I woke up in the morning, I always felt like I knew a lot more than I did when I went to sleep the night before. Now, this woman spent 14 years, I believe it was, in the General Assembly at the UN representing Cambodia. She's not a lightweight. She was someone entrusted with representing her country internationally at the UN, and she doesn't back away from her story at all. As a matter of fact, as you know, in the film, we have an expert consultant to the U.S. Army Special Forces, a man who teaches them how to read body language, who basically says this woman's telling the truth, and the same thing about Meyer. And, you know, it's not the kind of thing you can fake when you've got such a preponderance of varied evidence of such stellar quality.
We're talking about some older photographs and obviously older instances of Meyer's contact in his younger years. When did Meyer first start really coming into contact with these beings? Now, was it when he was very young?
Yes. He was only 5. He was 5 years old. It was at first a telepathic message that he got in his head, and this was a little, you know, troubling to him. He was hearing a voice, but the voice was very clear, very calm, very specific, and he received this telepathy a number of times, and then he was kind of drawn, I felt, you know, drawn to go out and play, and went through the meadow into the forests, you know, beautiful country, Switzerland, with so many meadows and forests, and he went out, and there was this pear-shaped object on large, you know, like struts landing legs, and an elderly man in what he described as looking like a deep-sea diver suit without a helmet. And this man is standing there, and Meyer said he felt like it was safe, it was familiar. This turned out to be the man who was telepathically contacting him.
Was it ever disclosed to Meyer why he was being contacted, why he would be singled out for contact?
Yes. Well, there was a backup plan here. There were 5 or so other people who could have possibly been recruited. had it been necessary, but it turned out that none of them really were up for the job, and it also turned out that, you know, all of them died sooner or later. Much, you know, Meyer is still alive, none of them are. But the reason is this, and of course, I like to tell people very, you know, plainly, there's things in the case that I can definitely prove, you know, in my opinion. There's other things that I simply say, we'll call them speculative, because they deal with things that we don't have the mechanism at this time yet to prove, either from the distant past, the, you know, the as yet unarrived future, or some kind of a thing such as what I'm about to describe. The reason pertains to the following. Reincarnation, according to Meyer and according to his extraterrestrial teachers, is a fact of life that we don't know. We may believe it or we may disbelieve it. We simply don't know for sure whether it's true or not. Okay, they're saying the following. This is a fact of life, and the human being, the part of us, if you will, that reincarnates is the human spirit. Not the soul, but the spirit. It's an eternal aspect of us that has a destiny to live countless millions of lifetimes. It's kind of beyond our imagination. The Pleiarans state that at certain levels, their technology is so advanced that they can track and identify a spirit, meaning they can know who that person incarnated as before, and they can have information that way. They know, according to this, that Meyer, his spirit, not a personality, but his spirit, has incarnated in the past as a number of other specific prophets, and that this spirit would have gained enough experience over many thousands of years so as to be capable of being brought, you know, if you will, into this role again for humanity at this time. Now, that's a lot to have to take in, but that's, you know, that's, a, let's say, the first half of it.
Okay. I think we're presented with an idea of alien now that seems to be pretty much the poster figure for what contact is going to look like, but that's obviously very different from Billy's contacts. What are his thoughts on what we call the Greys?
Well, here's the thing. You've hit on something quite important, because what we are dealing with when we have these stereotypical aliens, the little gray guys, and I'll get more specific about them in a moment, but what we're dealing with primarily is disinformation deliberately crafted going back decades, primarily originating in U.S. Secret Service and intelligence for the very distinct purpose of making people afraid of quote-unquote aliens or extraterrestrials, to demonize anything, anyone foreign to us. So the popularized versions, and the meaning not only the grays, but alleged reptilians and insectoids and all this other stuff, is generated at very high levels to create fear and to control people and to even pave the way, ultimately, for a false ET attack. So the grays thing, here's what, you know, we are told in the Meyer case about it. There were crashes. This is, according to them, quite true. Roswell and maybe 8 or 9 other places in different parts of the world, where there were disks that were that crashed that were recovered and in varying condition, and in some cases there were small beings that were associated with these disks. What we're told here is that these were android beings. They weren't the human beings who originate in other planets far in the far depths of space. These were little biological entities that were, you know, manufactured, if you will, by more advanced human races. So this is a wonderful thing to then create a demonized alien that's abducting everybody and their brother, you know, and creating hybrid babies and all the rest of this utter nonsense that isn't coming from outer space. If it exists, it comes primarily from here. So that's their take on it. And, you know, on my website, I've got a ton of free reading that covers this stuff, too. Can I mention the website address?
Oh, by all means, go right ahead.
Thanks. It's www.theyfly, that's T-H-E-Y-F, as in Frank, L-Y, theyfly.com.
Now, a question that I have, and it seems like the typical abduction scenario and the one that we hear so much about in the media, it just seems to be happening just rampantly. It seems as though the numbers are just constantly tripling and quadrupling it exponentially. But it seems as though we don't get a lot of media exposure to contact experiences like Myers. Is that because they're not happening in abundance, or just because we're not given the information?
Well, let's start with what you brought up first, the so-called abductions again, and all of them that are supposedly happening. There's several elements here. One is mass hysteria, because this whole concept is pumped relentlessly into our society via the media, entertainment, every angle now. There's you know, little gray guys and demonized ETs, aliens, and what have you. So there's a mass hysteria component. There's the component that people take this in unconsciously and into what I call the subnoxious mind. They just start absorbing all sorts of stuff. So when they go to sleep, and if they have a rough night or if they have sleep paralysis, they think they've been abducted by aliens. The problem with that premise on its face is, why do we think that very advanced beings coming from the depths of space who have super high technology, have probably of necessity much longer lifespans than we do and all that, why would we think they're just lined up because they can't wait to get a hold of Edna in Oklahoma and beam her onto a craft and probe her and stick needles in her and scare the, you know, the daylights out of her and, you know, then return her to her bed so, you know, in the morning she can scream and wake up the fan. Why do we think that we're that important and that this would have any value for a race? Now, the quick answer, people say, well, they want our genetic material. And I say, if you go to a nurse or a doctor, they get your genetic material in about 5 seconds with a cotton swab. You know, this isn't
right.
necessary. And we don't have such great genetics. Our lifespans are short. We have many degenerative diseases. Our emotions are for crap. We've got an overwhelming level of greed, hostility, aggression, violence, fear, and, you know, and crazy beliefs and crazy religions and all this stuff. And what is it that's so appealing that we've got, you know, aliens from the depths of space virtually lined up like at a drive-in somewhere just waiting to get their hands on us?
Well, my thought is, could it be possible that
they're all taking a proctology course?
That,
because it seems
that.
Well, things are looking up, yeah.
That, or, you know, is it possible they're coming here to help us and they're gathering this information to eradicate the flaws that are found in, you know, humans?
Well, here's the thing about it. Because the second part of your question had to do with context. Are there other ones and, you know, what's it about and all that? According to the Meyer case, and again, I always say there's certain things I can prove, some I can't. I'm just giving you information from the Meyer case. There are no other contacts going on.
Mm-hmm.
Well, everybody that thinks that they're a contactee is going to get all in a huff about that. Well, my answer is the Meyer case established a standard of proof that you have to meet if you are going to claim that you're in contact with beings, intelligent beings from outer space. And for most people don't know the content of the Meyer case. They don't know the conversations, the logic, the knowledge, the scientific stuff imparted to Meyer that's so far beyond what any channel or bozo can come up with on their own, apart from, we are the space brothers, come to you in love and light, telling you or you are masters on your plane of existence, babble, babble, babble. These people are telling us, no, you're in trouble, and we've been trying to warn you without interfering in your world because we're not going to change it for you. We can't interfere. We're not here to save you. We are here to drop this information into your world in an oblique way that you have to work for because you have to do it all for yourselves anyhow. So we're just being asked to review the information that one man has been courageous enough, who has survived 21 attempts on his life, kidnapping attempts on his children, defamation, vilification for, you know, 50 years, whatever it is, and he's put this information out basically for free. And all we're asked to do is to take a look and to go through and see if indeed there's a foundation of credibility that would warrant our paying attention to the warnings in here. They pertain to all of us.
Now, are you familiar with the Stan Romanek story?
Only a little bit. I've heard just a little bit. You know, the problem for me is nobody puts real hard proof on the table. And maybe you want to add something to that I don't know about, but
no.
I haven't.
Oh, go on.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead. You haven't.
I haven't seen anything that comes remotely close. It's, look, I can show you documents with copyrights where Meyer told about specific scientific discoveries of major importance years or decades before they occurred. And we have tons of that stuff varied in astronomy and archaeology and just all over the place, genetic stuff. And other people talk about aliens and they've seen them in underground bases. A lot of people themselves are guinea pigs without knowing it for mind control. And they may not, they may bristle at that idea, but they don't know. They can't prove that they're not because they can't bring forward anything of significance to establish their stories.
Now, one thing with the Stan Romanek story is that he even admits that he has like a sixth grade math education, but after his abduction, I put the emphasis on the strange syllable there. After his abduction,
I like it though. It's almost like it's new term. It's great.
Abduction. He was doing these. He was writing basically in his sleep these complicated physics equations that he would have no concept of and no clue of what they mean, which sounds like a lot of it was like pointing towards how to create like a wormhole to travel through time. And he did say that they were giving us a message that we are in trouble.
Right. Well, look, even Meyer's not the first one to tell us we're in trouble, but as for significant information of a technological nature, that's the last thing we're going to get. We may get assistance, and it's mainly received unconsciously by some scientists in medical fields. We may get some assistance for the development of things which are non-military apps, things that can help people through medicines and that type of thing. But the people who receive that generally don't even know they're receiving it. They think it's their own idea and they develop. We're not going to get high tech from aliens because we've already well established that anything that might have a military application will be first used to kill people. So, Stan, there are possible explanations, and I'm not going to say it's so. There are parts of us, some people have personalities that suddenly kind of come alive where they discover a suppressed ability, and there can be psychological reasons for that. If somebody had indeed been played with as a mind control experiment, hypnotized without their knowing, maybe they were taught how to comprehend certain things in physics and all, we don't know. But the main thing that discredits the whole story, not that he is deliberately lying, I don't know that, but what discredits it as a real contact case is that it would have anything to do with space travel and time travel and all that stuff. We don't need that. We are so far technologically ahead of ourselves and spiritually retarded and morally retarded that the last thing we need right now is the ability to take this insanity into space.
One thing that you mentioned that I wanted to sort of focus on for a second, too, is spiritual. I think whenever we start talking about science and technology, we tend to separate the spiritual from that. What were Meyer's contacts saying as far as our spiritual development? What was the message there?
The message is it's the most important part of the whole thing. And let me kind of move into that because this is really the thing that has to be spoken about most. Now, there's spiritual teaching in this case and teaching of consciousness, about truth, the teaching of truth, the teaching of life, the teaching of spirit. And that is the single most important aspect of this case because it's the single most important aspect of life when it's established in balance with the material worlds, wherever they may be. We are so far, too much, as I said, into the materialism that, we're basically spiritually and consciousness-wise retarded. So what does it mean to say, then, in this context, what's the spiritual teaching in the Meyer case? Well, at this stage, we have to understand that there is a core principle teaching that applies at any and every level of spiritual development in a society. And if we simply moved to this, and I'm going to state what it is, and it's nothing in a sense even new, but if we understood this and started to go in this direction, we'd be well ahead of the game, and it'll be the game we'll be playing for millions of years. So here's what it is. What they're saying is human beings do not understand that their thoughts, how they think, whether they're conscious of it or not, gives rise, or the thoughts give rise to feelings and to actions, and that we, most humans, are primarily unconscious. We're not aware that we're thinking or exactly of what we're thinking and or how the thoughts produce the feelings in us and how the thoughts compel us to action. Now, because one of the immutable laws of the universe is the law of cause and effect, we have to learn how to observe our thoughts, how to monitor them, and then how to shape them in a preferred way so that we get the life personally and the world that we want and not the mess that we see we have created. This whole thing that we're at each other's throats with all the religious insanity, with all the secular insanity, all of that, we've created that through indoctrination, through blind belief, following false leadership, and basically abdicating our self responsibility for everything in our lives. So the core teaching here, number one, is complete and total self-responsibility. That means we are also interdependent with others, but we first have to be determining for ourselves, knowing what we're thinking and taking responsibility for that. That, from there, opens up a tremendous amount of, you know, information and teaching and different levels and steps of it, but it's the core for everybody in evolution, any and everywhere in the universe, and they claim, of course, now that there are billions of human races, we just don't know about them, but we have that task at hand from this moment on. As soon as we know that that's our job, we have to be doing it 24/7.
Now, I've got a question coming from our chat room.
Sure.
Actually, it was our previous guest tonight is asking if you think it would be possible if ghosts could actually just be visitors.
No. You know, it's very interesting. In the Meyer case, there's so much information about things that we call paranormal. And what they state is that, you know, this isn't meant to hurt anybody's feelings. There's nothing paranormal. It's only we don't know all about nature, all about natural law, and all about manifestation. Not everything that we even think is supernatural or paranormal exists, but things like ghosts, they do explain it. Let me tell you what I understand of it, and I'm going to be able to give you only a basic understanding. There's something that they call fluidal, as in fluid, fluidal forces that every human being generates during the course of their life. It's a kind of electromagnetic energy or plasma, if you will. We don't currently have equipment that detects it, but we generate it. This energy, this fluidal force, carries information with it. As we live and experience our lives, we are imparting into this energy this information. It also attaches to things. If you wear jewelry, which they don't recommend for other reasons because of the contamination of gems and all that, but if you wear jewelry or certain clothing, living with certain items in your home, your fluidal forces, the fluidal forces of people, attach to these different things. And sometimes, in certain cases, these forces can be triggered when a person is alive or if they're dead. Nonetheless, some of this energy can be triggered depending on the intensity of it, the how and where it's attached, etc., and that most apparitions, ghosts, poltergeists, and what have you that actually appear that are not faked manifestations are this plasma, this fluidal force. It isn't a consciousness. It's not like it's really Uncle Joe wandering up and down the stairs. It's an energetic, you know, package, if you will, that can take form. It can actually cause things like the knocking, rapping, different manifestations. Meyer has a whole book on this in German. Unfortunately, my German's not even good enough to understand it all. But he gives a couple of very interesting examples, many more actually than a couple. One, there was an elderly woman who'd grown up in a particular home, and she, I guess as she got older, she moved out to an apartment or something. When she would go to sleep at night in her other newer place, the residents, the inhabitants of the old building in which she grew up, the old house, would often see a young girl in a dress walking around, walking down the stairs, and then disappearing. This woman's psyche, her psychic energy was strong and would trigger this apparition even though she wasn't there. Mm-hmm. So that's just a little bit about that kind of stuff.
That's fascinating.
We get a lot of listeners who are really into hauntings, really into the ideas of ghosts. So I think that that was a very, very great approach, and the answer is something I think that can be respected without disrespecting the subject material. So I think that was great.
Well, yeah, let me just, if I just may add one little thing, and that is to say, look, there are real phenomena that take place. It's just that, it, according to the Meyer material, we don't understand what the what they are often, and it's we kind of get caught up in pursuing it from a certain point of view. If we understood better what it was, and this is discussed online, there's a free online forum, and they discuss this kind of stuff too. If we understood it better, it would also be very good for us, and we would learn also to not take on certain things from other people or wear other people's jewelry and things like this, because it can produce problems. So a lot of your people probably know all that already.
Now, I think that, again, the strongest thing about the Meyer case, and obviously as far as the philosophy, I think the philosophy sometimes gets lost because of just how strong the photographic evidence is, and that seems to be what people concentrate on. One thing that I had heard is that people have tried to reproduce the photos using what would presumably be the exact specifications for a hoax, and a lot of people have come up very, very short.
Yeah, it's interesting because there's one I'm dealing with now that's kind of interesting, actually. But on my website, you can read, there's a set, if my mouth will work here, there's a section on skeptics. And I have a whole number of articles there about the different skeptical challenges and attempts to duplicate the evidence and all that. And we haven't even gotten to the prophecies yet, but let me just say about it. There's one British skeptic who tried, and, you know, it's not good, but he did get in touch with a guy in Britain who's been doing apparently some real study on what's called the wedding cake UFO, and he came up with a, they just sent it to me this morning, some couple photos, and he says, well, you know, we're going to show it's all a hoax. And the photo, the guy made a really good model. I mean, I have to give it to him. It doesn't look as convincing to me as the one in Meyer's photos and in his video, but the guy, finally somebody at least made a really good model. Now, then again, you could say, well, there are wonderful models of airplanes, that have been put out for a long time by companies that manufacture models. And we have to remember this guy's doing a model of something that Meyer has photographed, and, of course, he's claiming it's got to be a hoax. The skeptics have a long way to go, and it's actually a dead-end road for them because we can prove. I have one new article up on my website about, I think it's the Hassenball photos finally proved or something like that, final proof, and we show a very famous photo. It's called the sunlight photo where you see the UFO with sunlight twinkling off of it, and it's hovering right next to a barren branch tree with four other barren branch trees around on a hillside. Very impossible to duplicate, yet the skeptics were saying, no, it's a miniature model and those are miniature trees. Well, we put up a film clip taken maybe 20-something years ago with Meyer and one of the Japanese film crew walking up to that very tree while the tree now is in full bloom. But onto that hill, you can see the same trees, the same mountains. So you look and you're going, oh, my gosh, that tree's got to be like 40-something feet tall. And you look at the photo and you go, it's real. How do you can't take a little 10-inch model and, you know, put it up against a 40-foot tree and come up with the same thing. So the skeptics are always going to come close, but no cigar.
Now, let's talk about prophecy for a moment. Another thing that I think sometimes gets sort of thrown by the wayside, even though it's very convincing, because, again, of such strong photographic evidence. What is the prophecy surrounding the Meyer contact case?
Well, that's the way you put the question. Let me try and actually answer that question. Meyer, as a prophet for these times, nobody has to accept that, just giving information, has been foretold for a long, long time based on the material in the case, based on what are said to be ancient prophecies and even ancient scrolls discovered in 1963, in an ancient tomb on the outskirts of Jerusalem, scrolls that are known as the Talmud Emmanuel now and published in the book. Meyer is himself foretold as coming during these times of this. And the prophecies, all of the prophecies that he has published, that he either authored or was given by the ETs, pertain to events in our world, to scientific discoveries, and basically exist to help us avoid self-destruction. And what prophecies mainly are warnings about signposts, meaning if you don't change the direction you're going in, this event is going to occur. And then if you're still going down that bad road, this event and that event are other negative signposts. Prophecies can, up to a certain point, be changed. Predictions are another story. Those are things that are written in stone. They're going to happen. They are irreversible. They have to occur, either because they're kind of cosmic events of some nature that we have no way of, you know, either generating or stopping, or because they are prophecies that have passed the point of no return. In other words, that human beings were not responsive and didn't change in time. So that's where we sit right now, with some prophecies still changeable and some have gone into prediction.
Now, is 2012 part of this in any way?
Well, in a sense, yes, but not exactly as the people think with the Mayan prophecy solely. And again, we've got free articles up on the website, too, where you can read more in detail than I can maybe tell you, but I'll try. The Mayan, you know, completed a calendar before they themselves were basically wiped out through famine and flood and starvation and all of that. It wasn't some mystical thing where they went to Mars with a bunch of ETs. They had gone through very rough periods of time. They had resorted to cannibalism several times. They had been almost decimated throughout their history, and finally that was it. They didn't get around to doing the next calendar. The calendar of 2012 has the Earth kind of appearing in a certain way, surrounded by the Milky Way, and it's all very nice. However, it also apparently is a time of a culmination of a super strong solar cycle that is going to impact the Earth very strongly. It may even blow out the electrical grids here. It could cause the space station to fall. It could do all sorts of stuff, varying degrees, depending on the actual intensity of the, you know, the solar storms and all this stuff. There are other things environmentally that can also be happening at that time, and that are on their way anyhow, based on laws of cause and effect, to varying degrees. Global warming, Meyer was warning about this, starting in 1951. He's not a newcomer. You know, Al Gore is the newcomer to the whole thing compared to Meyer. He was publishing stuff starting in 51, 58, 64, all along warning. Sea levels are going to rise. The glaciers will be melting. You're going to have increased earthquake and volcanic activity, tsunamis, storms, droughts, floods, ozone damage, all this stuff. He's been warning about it for decades. But because it's inconvenient for corporations, for the military, for the powers that be, for politicians, for everybody that thinks that you should worship little green pieces of paper, which they will neither be able to eat nor breathe as things get a little rougher, well, they don't want to deal with this. They don't want Meyer's voice heard. They don't want people to know that this story has been going on for some, 58 years with this man, whatever it is over there in Switzerland. Actually, more like 68 years, if it get my addition right. So there is so much here that, if people simply looked into this and passed the word and said, hey, look into this, what do you think? You don't have to believe it. You don't have to buy anything. You don't have to join a group. You don't have to send money. Just start thinking and looking here and start talking to people, because it's only really through grassroots that this is going to emerge. Believe me, I had received a call from the producer of the Larry King show telling me to tell people to stop writing and calling them about having me on the show for the Meyer case when they do their little fluffy UFO shows. Literally called me up and said, tell people to stop it. We don't want this. They don't want it because they can't handle it. You know, that old Jack Nicholson line there about not being able to handle the truth.
Right,
this is the biggest case of it. So This is loaded for bear. The prophecies and predictions here. Look, in 58, Meyer foretold those two U.S. wars with Iraq under a president who would be the son of a former president. He named AIDS by name as a coming worldwide epidemic. Plastic credit cards, people would carry their telephones with them. Televisions and computers in every home, interconnected electronically around the world. 1958. Hmm. And that's only, you know, 6 or 7 of 160. That's posted for free on my site. Go read, you know, and see. And here's the thing. Some people say, well, can you prove that this was published at this time or that? And some of the documents I say, actually, I can't. But guess what? We know when we posted them, and start looking and see what happened after we posted some of these things. You notice some things that are coming true since these have been up? So it's a very clever thing. These people, if there are indeed extraterrestrials involved with this, they are very smart. They're not spoon-feeding us. They're throwing in little roadblocks. They're making us work for it. And so if we come to the place where we go, gee, this could be real, we get there on our own.
What, to you, was probably the most convincing prediction?
You know, it's funny. I have to do a new DVD coming up, and I'm supposed to answer that again. There's so many of them. One that pops in my mind that just blew my mind was... I don't know if you recall that there was in 1999 or so, somewhere in there, or 2001, right around there, there was the discovery of a mummy called the Iceman,
mm-hmm.
and up in the Austrian Alps.
Yes.
They found this perfectly preserved mummy. And I remember I came upon this last year, I think it was, I came upon it on the Internet again because National Geographic had it up there, and I went, oh, wait a minute, I think I know something about this from the Meyer case. So I went back into the text of the Meyer case, and I'm reading, and there's a whole thing where Meyer is talking to one of these alleged ETs, and the guy says to him, later this year they're going to discover a perfectly preserved mummy up in the Alps of a man that lived 5,100 and some odd years ago. And Meyer's saying, really? Tell me more. And he starts telling him all about this. Well, here's where it gets interesting. So Meyer publishes that in his local transcripts, and then I think it's in about 2005 or 6. He publishes it in a copyrighted book. Well, people might just say, well, he went back and saw that information and published it to make it look like he did that. But here's what happens. It happens, and right now I'm not real fresh with the dates because it is on my website and I'm not in front of the computer. I think it's like 2001 or 2005, something. 5 years after discovery, they take the mummy into a hospital in Italy. They want to do a CT scan to find out what killed this guy. So they find out that there's a cracked skull, but even more interestingly, there's an arrowhead lodged in his back. And so they conclude, logically, somebody shot this guy with a bow and arrow. That's what killed him. Someone killed him. So I go back to the Meyer material, and guess what? In that same stuff that was published in the late 90s and again in 2001, whatever it is, Meyer says to him, well, how'd this guy die? And they said to him, well, he was standing on a kind of a high terrain, and he had an epileptic seizure, and he fell and hit his skull when he fell backwards, and he landed on one of his arrows. This is in print in a copyrighted published book 5 years before they bring the mummy into the hospital. Hmm. Now, tell me, a cracked skull? Describe the whole thing with an arrowhead. So I'm talking to one of my friends, and I said, well, gee, I'm wondering who's right here. And they said, well, Meyer's right. I said, well, why do you say Meyer's right? He said, it's very simple. Nobody shot this guy because during prehistoric times, even up to 100 years ago or more, when native peoples, primitive peoples, would kill an animal with a handmade weapon like a knife, a spear, or an arrow, they didn't leave the arrowhead in because it took too long to make these things. They took it out. And since this guy was found by himself, and it wasn't just like a big battle where maybe there's a bunch of, you know, dead people and nobody was there to retrieve arrowheads, one guy, they would have taken it. So I don't mean to ramble on, but that one blows my mind.
No, and definitely so. Tell us about the new DVD.
Which one, the one you have or the one I'm going to be making?
You know what, let's go with the one that I have, and then we'll have a brief conversation about the following one as well.
Sure. Well, what you have there is the Billy Meyer story, UFOs and Prophecies from Outer Space, that was alternately called The Silent Revolution of Truth. That's a film that we made. We went over, a buddy and I, We went to Switzerland and interviewed Meyer and a good number of other people, witnesses, family members. We walked around some of the parts where Meyer had actually photographed and or recorded the sounds of the craft. We brought, as I said, we brought in a guy who is a special forces consultant to read body language. We talked to other witnesses. We even have a special section on the film and the special features that we gave over to a skeptic to make his best case against the, you know, Meyer. And this is we have a 94-minute film with 38 minutes of special features and tons of good stuff. We show lots of the photographs. We show films. We show the video, sound recordings. And, you know, it's jam-packed, and it's Meyer speaking and answering questions that we posed to him.
And where can our audience pick up this DVD?
Well, they can get it either from my website, theyfly.com, or from realityentertainment.com. And within about a week or 10 days, I think it goes into Blockbusters and other venues as well. But if they want it now, they can, you know, they can just get it pretty quickly. We've got them. We definitely have them on hand. And, you know, of course, in the same time, and if they order and they mention your name, we'll send them a free CD, too. You know, if they say that they heard about this on our show, all they have to do is write the word free in the order, and then we'll pop out an additional $25 CD with it. It's worth, you know, it's actually more expensive than the film.
Wow.
But it'll give them weeks of reading material because we've put a lot of the transcripts all on a CD.
Well, I highly recommend the film. It's great, not only because of the information in it and the way that Myers is portrayed and you get to see his life, but just the fact that there's a lot of a really great production on the DVD, too. And it's something that's very, very easy to watch, which is great. Now, as far as the new DVD, why can you tell us about that?
Well, the most famous opponent to the Meyer case is a guy named Cal Korf, who in the 90s went there like undercover to try and, you know, bust the case and all that, and wrote a book on it, Spaceships from the Pleiades or something. And Cal is, the most vocal opponent, and he claimed the case was a hoax and a fraud and all this. And Cal and I encountered each other, maybe a year and a half or two ago. We did two radio, you know, debates against each other, throwing everything, you know, in the kitchen sink at each other. And then one day, I think again about a year and a half ago, I had an idea to just send him a tongue-in-cheek email, just to joke with him, because I thought, you know, we don't have to always be so serious. And the email was read by one of his assistants, who wrote me back and said, hey, you seem like a really nice guy. Why don't you and Cal find a way to communicate that's friendly, and, you know, even though you have your differences? I said, well, of course, I'd be willing to. So Cal dropped me a very nice email, and I responded in kind, and we had this, you know, kind of mutual admiration society going back. It was very strange, because he's the most vigorous opponent of the case, but we decided we could disagree without being disagreeable, and that it would be much more to our credit and to the truth that we both, you know, want to find. I think Cal wants to find truth, and I do. If we really conducted ourselves in a civil way, and then Cal had the idea, it was his idea, why don't we do this double DVD where he said, I will present answers to, you know, the 80 questions or whatever it is on the Meyer case from my point of view, why I think it's a hoax and this and that, and you can present your why you think it's a genuine thing, and we will just, you know, be real civil. We won't call each other names or anything.
Right.
I have no problem with that at all. So I'm literally in the, you know, preparatory stages of putting together my part of it, and I will be sending it to him. He's in Czechoslovakia, and they will put it together, send it to me for, you know, approval of my part. And it will, you know, if all things are equal, we may have it out by Christmas.
Wow.
Well, that would be great. I think that would definitely be something we'd want to link to on the site, too, especially after tonight's interview.
Yeah.
We want to thank you so much for being on, Michael. This has been a great, great hour for us. And it's something, obviously, that I think we need to dedicate and devote more than just 1 hour to. So hopefully we'll be able to have you back on real soon. We can continue our conversation with you.
Be delighted. If you anybody there that could pop me an email with a link to this archive, and I'll share the interview with people and everything. So I really thank you, because I love the questions. They're, you know, they keep me moving here.
We've had a great time tonight, and we will have a downloadable version of tonight's show available within about 48 hours, again, for free off of the website, also available on iTunes, and I think almost 60 other downloadable podcast sites. So, you know, we'll do our best to make sure that as many people hear this as possible, because I think it's a great message. And not only that, but it was a fun show, and it's something that we'd really been wanting to look into for a while. And this has been our first Billy Myers show, which is great. Sort of a landmark in the last 2 years. So we want to thank you again so much for being on. Everyone who was in the chat room tonight, great questions for our guests, guys. We want to thank MCPI for being on. We've got a great show lined up for you next week. Three guests. Check the websites in the upcoming show section. One guest per hour, basically our Halloween celebration. Thank you again, Michael. We'll talk to you real soon, and we'll definitely send
that
link
your
way.
Michael, it's a pleasure. Thanks. Thank you very much.
Thank you, fellas. You're welcome.
Have a good night.
Have a great night. It's definitely great having Michael on with us, and I think we definitely need to have Michael back with us so that we can get into more of this, because this is a program that spans more than 1 hour.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
No doubt about it. And this will be available within 48 hours off of our website, off of iTunes. Definitely subscribe to our RSS feeds. That way you can get all the latest information as soon as we give it to you, which sometimes isn't as quick as we'd like, but we're going to try to make that change and very, very quickly. So thanks, everyone. Thanks, Live Evil. Thanks,
Dildo Daggins. The whole MCPI group that was in the chat.
Absolutely.
Tonight.
Those guys were really great tonight.
Icy Hot Man. SK Hates. Boo, I'm a ghost.
We got some great regulars, and these are listeners that make us want to do this as much as the subject material. These guys really are sort of a rock.
They're a rock. They hold us together, man.
And again, for anybody interested in two great musicians, I just love to plug these guys. They're doing gigs all around. Any kind of party could possibly think of, any kind of, anything you would need music for, they do it all. They're great guys. They're a lot of fun. They can MC your party. They're just real, real genuine, actual real musicians.
The Jonas Brothers.
No. I will tell you a story on the next show about the Jonas Brothers.
Well,
do we
have a way to contact these musicians?
Yes, we do. We absolutely do. Best way to get them, really, is via email. It's the Two Tones, THETU, Tones, TONES, @gmail.com. Great guys. Love them. You won't be disappointed.
Well, I think we had a lot of musicians in our chat room tonight, so maybe that's something that we can try to direct a little traffic to. We want to thank everybody again for stopping by. It's been a great night. We will see you in 7 with 3 fantastic guests. We have Deborah Blake on our first hour.
We have Jason Offit on the second hour.
And we have, now this is very interesting, Pop Culture and the Paranormal, a very special guest. Salem, Massachusetts has an awesome Monster Museum, Count Orlok's Nightmare Gallery.
I'm already scared.
This thing is absolutely awesome. And James, the owner, is going to be on with us talking about his interest in what we love, horror movies. It's going to be a great Halloween show.
Can't wait, guys.
Thanks, we'll talk to you soon.
Good night, everyone.
It's not Manowar.
It's Iron Maiden.